Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl from Incredibly Strange Films and Film and Stuff, and of course, Deviant Legion. And here with me today, as always, is my co-host, compatriot, Miss Rachel. Say hello, Miss Rachel.
Hello, Miss Rachel.
And you always do that. So today we have as our very special guest a friend of the podcast. He's been on with us before, and that's author and film historian and sports writer Danny Perry. Now, for those of you who may not know the name, Danny wrote three of the most important film books in the 80s, and that would be the cult movie series. Danny, I'll let you explain yourself and what you do on your page and what we're going to do tonight. So go right ahead, sir.
That's right. You've got a lot to answer for, buddy.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for inviting me back, if that's the way you feel. But thank you sincerely for inviting me back. I think this is my third time. I don't know. But anyway.
It's your first time, Danny. You're always welcome back anytime, man.
Okay. Well, anyway, explaining myself, I will briefly say, growing up, I was obsessed with movies and television and rock and roll and sports. And years later, that's what I wrote about. And I've been writing since, I guess, getting out of college, or actually during college in the early 70s, I've been writing, and I did, as you said, those cult movie books. And for the beginning of my career, I did a lot of movie books, Guide for the Film Fanatic, Alternate Oscars, Close-Ups, the Movie Star book. But then I kind of burnt out on movie writing and started writing sports books, and I actually ended up writing a lot more sports books than I did movie books. So in my retirement, which I'm a writer, so I guess I never really retire, but I haven't really written anything for professionally for a couple of years, so I guess I'm retired, but I stay busy occasionally. I'll start doing something online, posting things, and lately, I guess for about 2 months, I've been posting what I call random question of the day, which is mostly entertainment related, but also mix in some sports and just general things about life. And I thank both of you for occasionally contributing comments to whatever I write, whatever question I write about or ask you. And today, at Carl's invitation, he asked me to come on and ask you both a lot of questions and see if we can get a conversation going around.
Oh, absolutely. We have questions for you, too. And one thing I want to say to our listeners is that if you follow Danny's Facebook page, and that's Danny Perry, P-E-A-R-Y, you have some of the best questions and some of the best people coming back with answers. It's very entertaining. It's a great page, man. No problem.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I try to have fun with it. It's actually been shocking how many people have commented because, you know, I think, hey, I'm going to put a random question up, 10 people will respond, and then I'll respond to them, and then by lunchtime, that's it. But until about 5 minutes ago, I was still responding to people who commented on today's question, which is what I'm going to ask you. I'm going to ask you to begin.
I'm going to go ahead and say something, and I'm sure that you know exactly what I mean when I say this, Danny. I'm intentionally a little obtuse with my answers, although they are completely founded in truth. That I try to be a little esoteric with how I answer things because.
Have you looked at the comments of the other a lot of the other people? I have no idea what they're talking about. It seems like they did not read my question, and they just, including on today's, and they just put everything else. You know, I'll ask about a specific genre, and they'll write about a totally different thing and list all their favorite films of all time. Is that, I didn't ask you that, you know, but it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun, but it really just shows, you know, you two are among, and we three are among the people who are just, we can't help it. We're obsessed with movies. So we, you know, we keep watching movies, which is leading my first question again. Okay, what I didn't write it down here, so I'm going to sort of improvise what it was. But it's if you're tired at night but still have 90 minutes, that's the limit, 90 minutes before bedtime, what genre of movie are you most likely to watch? I expect, Carl, I expect you to say horror movie, and I don't know
well,
what
I'm
Rachel's going to say.
That would be one. That would be one, horror.
Carl's going to go
might
with,
do
like,
a
religious
documentary,
horror.
Too. You know, I might do a
you're
documentary.
You're both talking, so I don't know what
oh,
say
okay.
that again.
I would do horror, but I'd also possibly do a documentary, too.
Ah. You know, somebody wrote documentary. That's one of the first people, and I'm thinking, if you're tired, do you watch a documentary? So I would have to, I would ask you, Carl, is there a type of documentary that you could watch even though you're tired and you won't fall asleep to and you want to watch? Is there, somebody mentioned concerts or documentaries about rock musicians, and I said that made sense to me. So what kind of documentary would you watch?
Well, let's see. Certainly, you know, on a particular rock musician or actually any musician, you know, mm-hmm. that I had an interest in. I could also do one that was sort of like on a specific person if I was had an interest in that person, just like, you know, Gonzo, which is Hunter Thompson. And I'm a huge
mm-hmm.
Hunter Thompson fan. Or
mm-hmm.
or something like that. You know, that's what I would watch. But you're probably right, horror first. So, Miss Rachel, what about you?
Well, I would say that I typically watch documentaries I'm interested in when I need to do work around the house because I have to have that background noise. You know, I need to have other voices talking to me other than my own.
Earlier in the day.
Yeah. So, but I do watch true crime shows
mm-hmm.
to go to sleep to because –
Ah.
Well, you know, Carl, Danny, you probably don't, that I was raised, my mom worked in the crime lab for like 10 years, and they were all my crazy uncles and aunts, and I'm actually featured coughing in the background of one of those forensic shows, but growing up in that kind of environment, those shows I can go to sleep to. Because I know the processes that they're actually doing and all of these things. So it's kind of a comfort for me because, you know, my mom had really weird hours during those years. And sometimes I would be at the crime lab between 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning and I'd be sleeping around all of these people talking about their scientific theories. So I can watch those and fall asleep immediately.
Well,
but
what's
only
coincidence?
If it's like a true crime thing.
Well, here,
okay,
this,
I'm
going to
interrupt here for a second. I'm going to interrupt
okay.
and just say we have somebody else on the line, and that would be Stephen Ronquillo. Stephen, how are you, sir?
Hello. Hello, Mr. Perry.
Hello.
Hey.
Okay. We can hardly hear you, Stephen.
Okay, hold on. Come on, where is it?
There, we hear you now. So did you hear Danny's question?
No, what?
Okay, Danny, repeat the question for Stephen.
Okay, it's late at night. You're tired. You have 90 minutes before bedtime. what genre of movie would you most likely put on your TV set?
A Terrence Malick film.
Stephen, we can hardly hear you. Try that again. Stephen, call back. Call back.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that'll give me a chance to interrupt Stephen, okay? I have something. First of all, Carl, the genre I most likely will watch will be horror movies because they're the easiest to watch, and they mostly are under 90 minutes, particularly the old ones including science fiction shows, movies from the 1950s. They're all like 72 minutes or whatever, so they all fit in the timeline. Now, for Rachel, what I was going to say, coincidentally, I'm now reading, what I do usually is read from, I watch a movie from 12:30 to 2, and then I'll read for half an hour before going to bed. And the book I'm reading now is by Kathy Reichs. Do you know who she is by any chance? She was a forensic she was a forensic expert, and she's who the character on the TV show Bones was based on. So I've read about four or five of this. This is a little different, but her earlier ones are all about a character who was a forensic expert. So you were talking about all the forensic stuff. So her books were filled with, you know, of somebody in a forensic lab figuring out everything, you know, how the crime was committed and whatever by using forensic evidence. So there's a coincidence there. Horror movie followed by a book about forensic evidence. So there we go.
And you can ask Carl, I am a huge horror movie fan. That's typically where I gravitate towards. But a lot of the horror movies I like to watch do tend to go over that 90-minute mark. But documentaries usually stay around the 90 minutes because they're trying to fit into a subsection of filming. And so, as far as going to sleep,
hello?
Definitely going to be
documentary. Stephen. You're there. Okay, Stephen. Did you hear,
Stephen is back.
Hear the question again?
Yeah, and I picked an easy one for me. A Terrence Malick film.
A Terrence Malick film.
You have to say 90 minutes. 90 minutes. Terrence Malick doesn't make 90
minutes.
90
minutes.
Funny.
95 to be exact.
Okay. Oh, okay. So you're talking Badlands. Okay.
Oh, Badlands.
No, Days of Heaven.
Oh, Days of Heaven. Okay.
Okay, but you run out of Terrence Malick films, so we don't want a director. We want a genre. What genre would you watch?
Well, it depends on if I have anything unwatched on my stack. I call myself a movie slut. Every genre, it depends on what's interesting to me at the moment.
So you have a wide spectrum of movies that you would watch. Some people can do that. I sort of, you know, I love every genre. I love every genre of movies. So from horror movies to serious dramas. But when I get tired at night, I think the easiest thing for me is to watch something that I think isn't a masterpiece that doesn't have subtitles, that probably I've seen before, and even something that I can do a crossword puzzle while I'm watching because I know the film so well, that kind of thing. It's ever easier.
No.
However, I do watch particularly horror movies that I forget the title the next day. My wife always will ask me, what did you watch last night? And I can never remember the title because I'd never heard of the movie until I, you know, found it on there. And they're generally all serial killer movies, as it turns out.
Well, I blame a lot of my weird taste on you, Danny, because I got the cult movie encyclopedia, And it taught me just to move beyond horror with all of the art, film, action, and just the sheer variety in that book.
Well, thank you. Thank you. My intention was to get people to see movies, whether I like them or not, but to call attention to the fact that there are people out there who love every one of those movies that I wrote about. And so I'm glad I impacted you. I hope I didn't corrupt you in a bad way.
No.
That's debatable. Steven has been a real influence on me on real cult material. He's written for Wing's Chop. So we're talking, Wing Wing films, and we're talking really, really oddball stuff, which is a wonderful thing because he's really pushed my limits at times, to say the least. All right.
I do have
another question? Oh, go ahead.
Well, I'm gonna ask another question, which is tied into the horror movie thing. And this question I haven't asked yet, but so you're getting a preview. Do you like horror movies in which the monster or the monster human being, like, and I'm thinking of stuff like Halloween and Friday the 13th, do you like it that the bad person, bad monster, serial killer gets away at the end, that they survive the film, that they are not killed? Do you like films with a downbeat ending of the evil continues to live, or would you prefer killed off?
Yeah. I'm 53, so I was raised with 70s horror, and 70s horror TV films were... Yes, if you watch the horror film on television in the 70s, 90% of the time, you're getting a downbeat ending.
Yeah.
All the time. I watched about 5 or 6 movies in a horror movies in a row that I actually hadn't seen before during 1 week, maybe last year, and I just said, every single one of them, the evil was the one that lived on, and I started getting tired of it. I said, I want one film where they kill off the bad person, or the bad, or whatever.
If you're trying to create a franchise monster, then it doesn't work as well than if they just do it as part of the plot.
Yeah. I mean, I detested the last Halloween movie that came out. I mean, everybody just killed Jason, and then he got up at the end anyway and killed off all the characters in the movie. I was infuriated by it. What do you think, you guys?
Like Superman. We burned him. We stabbed him. We shot him.
It's just too frustrating.
Yeah. Oh, I love a downbeat ending. I love a downbeat ending. I grew up in the 70s. And you talk either sci-fi or horror, then, things like Phase 4 or, the TV movies, Trilogy of Terror, any of those, House on Skull Mountain. Yeah.
But you hate reign of the 80s, too, just like I do.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing about it is, Stephen touched on it, but if you're going to do a series of film like Friday the 13th or Halloween, you can't kill off the evil character. And unfortunately, that's where we are right now. Hellraiser, you can't kill them off. They always come back, right? I mean, that's even true with Dracula and Hammer and so on and so forth.
Well, they could... I don't know what the solution is, but that last Halloween movie just infuriated me killed. Yeah, that he was killed off. See, I think it all started, this whole thing started with Jack the Ripper. Jack the Ripper movies, which went back all the way to, The Lodger, that Alfred Hitchcock, in silent films. The real Jack the Ripper was never found. So in all the movies about Jack the Ripper, he has to get away. And that's kind of the genesis of this whole thing with the evil people getting away at the end, leading to, well, sequels. Well, I don't really mind the sequels, but sometimes, I don't know, if Spider-Man could reboot every couple of years, they could reboot the all these movies and have a character killed off and then go back and start from the beginning and, you know, new ones.
Right.
I think that would be all right. You know, it's not just Halloween. I mean, just there are just lots of movies every...
There's just too many of them nowadays.
Yeah.
It's hard to find a one-shot.
Yeah, it is. So, Rachel, we haven't heard from you on this. What do you think?
Well, I think a whole lot of things. I mean, it's... I agree with Danny over here in that all of these remakes and everything else, it's just, it's fucking ridiculous. I don't want to see that right now. I want to see something different. You know, I talked about this the other week on our podcast about how upset I was that we're not even getting sequels or prequels at this point. We're getting the exact same goddamn movie remade with different people. Now, no, that is not saying anything about, you know, the POC recasts in a lot of movies and stuff that are coming out now. I stand that. I am so here for it. It's just that I'd like to see something different. I don't want to see the same movie.
Yeah, it's like Joe Bob said. Most people want to see the exact same film they had already seen, just different.
And people obviously go to Halloween or Friday the 13th, Friday the 13th, parts 44, expecting the killer to get away at the end, because, I mean, and they go, well, I guess, rooting for Freddy, you know, in Nightmare on Elm Street. So,
that's the thing is, I was going to loop back to that, in that you were talking earlier about these characters, you know, being resurrected. Well, there's a reason that these characters don't die, and that is because these characters are a part of a mythos.
Mm-hmm.
Which never dies. There's not really some crazy fucking dude whose family all died on Halloween and now he murders everybody that he might have ever been related to, blah, blah, blah. No, of course there's not. But we use these, if you like look back to the root of fairy tales even, these aren't just stories to entertain us. These are stories to educate us about, hey, don't be a fucking dumbass. These are the things that you do not to be an idiot. Like, if somebody is trying to kill you, don't stop and ask him why. Don't run upstairs to the attic. Run out the fucking house and scream your head off until somebody finally responds. Like, that's what fairy tales were. They were morality tales. They were stories to tell us how to act when crazy situations happen to us. And that's why I think a lot of people really connect with horror movies, is because, this kind of stuff doesn't happen to everybody on a daily basis. But if it does happen, it's comforting to know how not to do things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you yell at the screen?
Go ahead. Me? Do I yell at the screen? In a movie theater.
And that's actually another random question. But when somebody, you know, when the bad person confronts the usually the female at the end, and the female turns the tables on the bad person with some very sly maneuver, and they'll stab the bad person once.
Yeah.
and or they'll hit him on the head with a shovel and he'll collapse. And then instead of hitting on the shovel on the head of the shovel 20 more times, they drop the shovel and you know, just wander off. And you say, haven't you ever seen a horror movie before? You have
exactly.
to kill that person, but they don't do it. That's what that kind of stuff infuriates me.
Yeah,
it
drop knife syndrome.
And this is that's why I'm so particular about horror movies, and why the very last quote horror movie that I saw in the theater, and I'm about to date myself. The last horror movie I saw in the movie theater was that one with Nicole Kidman, The Others.
Oh, that's good.
Oh,
that's a good one. The surprise ending.
I was
ending.
Not impressed with it.
Oh, I liked it.
As far as most of it, and it was the only movie ever in my life I've made like audible comments in the theater.
I guess you did.
And everybody loved it. They were like, "Yeah, bitch, yeah."
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was well done, and it has. I don't want to give away the ending, but it has a great ending. I thought.
Yeah.
Rachel didn't think so.
I rewatched
it
recently, and I liked it a lot better than initially when I was in the theater. And I felt so bad. But, you know, everybody else seemed to enjoy it because...
Well,
because of
the twist, you actually learn why certain things happened earlier in the movie. It all makes more sense. But while watching the movie, you question things that are happening, and it's only revealed why things were happening in that particular way at the very end. So then you kind of reevaluate it. So I think seeing the movie twice, the earlier parts which you didn't like, would make more sense. That's my guess. So,
what I hate,
you know, weirdly enough. I actually called the movie. I knew what was going on. I leaned over to my friend Alex. She's the one that took me. And at almost the beginning of the movie, I leaned over to her and I was like, "They're fucking dead.
Well,
they're dead.
This is my joke. You have the sixth sense.
But
I do when it comes to movies, apparently.
You see movies.
Let's Steven get in. Go ahead, Steve.
What all the posters and the reviews say, you won't believe the twist. You'll never see it coming. As soon as you read that on the poster or the anything, you're going to be looking for that damn twist the whole time.
Right.
What's the use of having a twist if you know if the people know it's coming?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I have no defense for that, but let me ask a random question, which Rachel touched on, which was, I don't have it in front of me. Oh, here it is. Here's a random question from a couple of months ago. If one of the people you're with at a movie or is sitting in your vicinity starts talking back to the movie, saying things like, "Don't open that door," or "You're lying," and "She doesn't love you," or "He's not dead," or "Oh my God," do you change seats, say nothing, or tell them to hush, or join in?
It depends on the theater. If it's one of those rowdy audiences who are just really enjoying the picture, and they're like, "No, man, don't do that, man, don't do that, don't do that." Then it can be fun. But if it's just
if that was my
guy,
dinner with Andre,
I
would you be happy with
basically?
Yeah, not with
seen
that.
The movie, I went, "Shut the fuck."
Well,
yeah.
It could be people. Well, the reason for this question, why it came up to me, was my wife and I went out with a couple that we've known for like 40 years, but we never got into a movie with them, and they were kind of sitting with us. And all of a sudden, the woman started talking back to the screen, saying, "Don't do that," you know, that kind of stuff. Everyone, you know, about every 15 minutes, she's, "Oh my God," you know, talking out loud. And So our choices were, you know, the choices I just gave, and we said nothing, and we just sort of just cringed and pretended we didn't know her. And but that was very strange. So that's the genesis of that question that I asked, because she's I wouldn't say to her, shut the fuck up, because she was a dear friend, and she would have had her feelings hurt and whatever, but I was surprised by her talking. We were waiting for her husband to tell her to shut up, but he didn't.
That didn't happen.
No.
Yeah.
So what about you?
That is typically why I don't
go
out to movies with people, is because I am one of those people that sometimes I can't control myself. Now, I don't speak it out loud, like that everybody in the theater can
mm-hmm.
hear me. I do, however, lean over to my movie partner, whoever is
mm-hmm.
with me at the movie at that point, and I make my comments. And weirdly
mm-hmm.
enough that, you know, all of this is threading back together, but when I saw the others in the theater, that was the first time I had ever been to a movie where other people talked back to the movie. And it was also like that scene in Scary Movie 2 where they go to see a movie and the girl brings out her barbecue with, like, her aluminum foil and is making all this fucking noise. Seriously, the people in front of me brought fucking chicken wings. And this was, like, 20 years ago. This is when we were still, like, worried about sneaking a couple of canned sodas in a kind of large purse. So the fact that this person had a full-on fucking picnic in front of me, and then everybody was talking back to the movie, I was like, okay, so there is a time and a place where it's kind of appropriate, because for whatever reason, the planets aligned that night, and everything that anybody said was either fucking hilarious or so perfectly timed that it scared the whole theater. Like, there was one point where they were, like, creeping through something, and they're hiding in the closet, and they're about to open the door, and I just screamed out, boo. Right as the woman, like, throws her creepy face into the door, and everybody's screaming, and then they're laughing. So, yeah, it can happen and be a good thing, but I would not suggest it.
I would think the scary movies would entice people to shout out and laugh out loud and talk back to the screen, like Rocky Horror, where you talk along with it.
The best one that I went for was in an all-black audience, and they were just having the best time. You know that last story in it, Danny, with the guy who's locked in that prison?
And
it showed the white supremacist, and he was talking all that jive. That whole else was like, kill him! Kill that honky! And all of a sudden, he's like, I like you, brother. You kill more blacks than I ever did. You could have heard a rat pissing on cotton the second that line was over. That theater got, like, dead silent. Nobody said a word.
Well, the interesting experience I had many years ago was seeing Ms. 45 at the 42nd Street Movie Theater with in the daytime. And I don't know if you people know about this movie, but Abel Ferrara movie where the lead character who can't talk, it's sort of a repulsion. Based on Repulsion a little bit, or influenced by Repulsion. But anyway, the lead character is raped a couple of times, and this audience was like all these men, scary-looking men all through the audience just shouting and sort of, you know, enjoying the rape. And what happens in the movie is she turns the tables on men and goes off on her a vengeance spree, getting revenge on everybody who attacked her and killing a lot of people. And that all those men in the audience completely shut up. They were like horrified because they were identifying with the men on the screen who were tormenting her and sexually assaulting her, these guys. And all of a sudden they saw what happened to those guys they identified with. And it was unbelievable how quiet a 42nd Street theater got. So I always remember that.
I'm going to jump in here because we may have watched that movie at the same theater because I saw it also in the 80s Times Square Theater. But for those that don't know, a Times Square Theater is, you know, back in the day, that was a special place to watch movies because of the audience. And basically, more than often than not, it was a black audience. I remember seeing Sudden Impact. And boy, they were going off on, you know, I won't say the word, but it was, kill that N, you know, and this is black people saying it. Really something, but getting back to your question, I haven't really answered it yet. For horror movies, I think it's almost, you know, it's almost imperative that the audience react, and generally it's vocal. In terms of being scared and you'll hear screams or if there's something that they'll laugh at or something. But one of the ones I remember was seeing Halloween, the original Halloween, and took a friend to it. And the audience just went nuts, screaming, don't do that. You know, watch out, look out behind you. You know, and it really does add to that singular experience of being in a theater if you have something like that. Now, if someone's
Halloween, which the original Halloween is great, and I think you had a whole audience there of people, a whole audience of people being scared. Everybody was scared in that movie because you didn't know, you know, we didn't know who any of these people. We didn't know Jamie Lee Curtis was going to become a star. So everybody on the screen was vulnerable. So we didn't know who was going to get killed and what was going to happen. And, you know, and it was very, very scary. And we didn't know the capabilities of the guy in the mask. You know, what is he doing?
Yeah.
Can he be killed? Or he looks like he looks formidable. But everybody watching that movie was nervous, to put it mildly.
Absolutely. So. And you know, I mean, there are certainly times that if you've got people in front of you or in back of you just chatting while the movie's going on, that's absolutely horrific. But it's, at least they're reacting to the film. They're watching the film, and I give them a pass for that. I do, because I've actually yelled out something. Glenn Morgan's remake of Willard has a scene with Crispin Glover feeding nuts to the rats.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see half of the logo on the can. And then suddenly, oh, my God, it's Numb Nuts, is what I yelled. And everybody just cracked up. Of course, that was – you know, designed to do that. I'm sure that Glenn Morgan did that on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, I've done it too. So there you go.
So you took a chance. Cause...
And I told Paul about this is when I went to see Trash Fire by, what was his name called, the director?
Ricky Bates.
People were just so shocked and horrified at the end of it. That nobody, it was at a film festival. Nobody said crap for 20 minutes after that movie. It was like we'd all gotten slapped in the face as hard as we could. It was like looking like shell shock on everybody's face.
Oh, you remember Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the first one where the girl gets put on the hook. I think it just shocked everybody in the theater, you know, because we didn't know what Leatherface was capable of. And if you remember, just the girl all of a sudden being picked up by Leatherface and just carried and then put on a hook, and everybody, oh, my God. So we have, and, of course, the original was Psycho in the shower. You know, it was when Janet Leigh gets killed, just the audience is just stunned. You know, when we saw it in 1960. When we saw it in 1960, it was just, that doesn't happen to Janet Leigh a third of the way through the movie. So, Janet Leigh, the mother of Jamie Lee Curtis.
Top billed on the posters and advertised as the star.
Yeah, she was advertised as the star, and then she's gone.
She was the star, and that was the movie where I guess we knew there'd be a twist because the whole advertisement for Psycho was you're not allowed in the theater after the movie begins. That was what that was part of the big promotion, which has made everybody stand in line to go to see it. What is this movie that doesn't let you in if you miss the beginning? So, all right, ready for next question?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Okay, here's one. Who should we appreciate more, Carrie Fisher or Linda Hamilton?
Well, I know that if Vicky were here,
because he was a bad butt writer along with a bad butt actress,
which is why you'd pick Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, because she wrote some great scripts, and she was one of the most famous uncredited script doctors of the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, which people not everybody knows about, but she also wrote Postcards from the Edge. But what about Linda Hamilton? She contributed a lot, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But the problem is that after Beauty and the Beast, that it was just like, okay, you were 80s, get out of here. That was Hollywood's fault, not hers.
Yeah. Well, if they have more Terminator movies, but she made such an impact in the first Terminator movie, and then, you know, the Beauty and the Beast on TV, which I didn't watch, but I knew a lot of people loved that movie. I mean, TV show, and partly, I would assume, because Linda Hamilton is a surprisingly good actress.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
You got that ugly guy who could sing opera pretty good, who was on the show.
Well, they liked him too, but.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that was a question. And a lot of people, you know, what was interesting about this question where I picked Carrie Fisher, or I asked about Carrie Fisher or Linda Hamilton, people would pick Carrie Fisher, and a few people picked Linda Hamilton because they loved The Terminator and they don't like Star Wars. But it was a case where both people were liked by everybody. Nobody disliked either of these women. So it was basically a nice bunch of comments where everybody praised one or the other or both of them. Because they're important in our culture. You know, those, the Terminator and the Star Wars, obviously, are franchises that are really part of our, you know, counterculture and subculture and whatever. So.
So Rachel, do you have any preference on that?
No, I think you guys are taking good care of it.
Mm-hmm. All I could say is
I think about Carrie Fisher's, everybody's apparently, I mean, so many people, males and females, got a, you know, crush on her in Star Wars. I mean, that was a big crush. They fell in love with Carrie Fisher. I don't know if people fell in love with Linda Hamilton, but I think they just impressed by her, because it's a lot of really within a science fiction horror movie, she gives a really, really good performance. I watched Children of Corn.
I don't know if they love Linda Hamilton, but we wondered with us if they had a gunfight.
The gunfight, what?
I
couldn't
don't know
hear
if
that.
I fell in love with Linda Hamilton, but if they was a gunfight, she'd be one of the first we'd pray to be having her back.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. You know, for me, I haven't really said anything on this. For me, I have to go with Linda Hamilton. And the reason I go with Linda Hamilton is because I love kick-ass tough women. You know, I'm a huge Pam Grier fan and that. Now, I could tell you this. If Vicki were on the show and listening and called in, Vicki being my ex-wife and also a big science fiction fan, she'd say neither. She'd go with Sigourney Weaver. I'm just saying.
Well, is there a choice? Is there a choice between that? I mean, I guess because it's that's the other series. Alien, of course, is another franchise, so I guess it makes sense. I always think of it so funny because Sigourney Weaver's like 5'10", and both Carrie Fisher and Linda Hamilton are little people. So it shocks me. Sigourney Weaver, by the way, of the three, I think, she's the only one I've met, and really, really nice person, in case you want to know that. But she's really, really nice. I liked her a lot. She's one of the favorite. Sigourney Weaver, of all the people I interviewed, I've interviewed probably literally 750 to 1,000 people, and lots of movie people, and did pieces on, and she is one of two or three or four or five that wrote me a thank you note afterwards. Nobody ever does that, and so I always have a soft spot for her.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, I have a question for everybody. Of all the big horror films, of all the horror films that are coming out next month, which one are you guys really looking forward to the most?
Well, tell me what they are, because I don't know what they are. Being retired now.
Yeah, what do you say, Carl? Which one are you looking forward to?
Okay, can you give us choices?
There's The Monsters, Terrifier 2, the new Hellraiser, which actually looks good.
Right.
And the one that I'm looking forward to is Satanicals. What is it called? The new one from Mike Mendez?
Satanico Hispanico.
Yeah, Satanical Hispanico.
Well, that's done by a friend of the podcast. I got to go with that. That is, I don't know, Danny, if you know Mike Mendez or who he is, but Mike Mendez writes some of the greatest funny satirical horror movies out there, and it's just wonderful.
If you like your 50s bug movies, you need to see Big Ass Spider, Danny.
Oh, Big Ass Spider is absolutely hysterical. It's hysterical. Another thing is on the podcast, Mike. This Satanico Hispanico is a anthology film. He did a previous anthology film called Tales of Halloween, and he had Neil Blomkamp and a number of people on there directing. But his particular segment of that was basically Leatherface killing someone, and then an alien comes down, a little tiny, cute little alien looking for wanting to go to Halloween and Halloween treats. And it is one of the funniest things, and it just goes off the friggin' rails, man, with the bloodshed. It is beautiful. And Mike was on the show, and one of the best things that ever happened to me is he did the voice of the alien, so he said to me, twick or tweet. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
What about you, Rachel?
For sure.
Is there anything that you're looking forward to watch, be it at the theater or on streaming?
You know, one of the things I did see was Prey. Did you guys see Prey?
That was good.
Well, Prey was actually fantastic.
Rachel was answering. Rachel, what was you going to say? Yeah.
Oh, it's all good, guys. You keep going.
No, 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 it ain't good because you didn't say which one you wanted to watch next month.
Like I said, it's all good. You guys keep going. I don't
know. I'm not privy to titles that are coming out, big horror movies. I just kind of wait. I still haven't, since the pandemic, I really haven't gone to a lot of movies. So I kind of just wait patiently for films to come on and stream. And if they're, particularly if they're free, I'll be more inclined to watch them. Prey, I thought was pretty good. That's the one I did watch. I don't know if you guys have seen, speaking of funny horror movies, Werewolves Within. Have you guys seen that one?
Yeah.
No.
That was a good one.
I think that's pretty, that was a funny movie and also kept the scares in, and it's really hard to balance that. And so I thought that was a pretty good one.
Good. So do you have another question for us, Danny, or are we done?
I have many questions. I've been doing this for a while, and one of the ones I said I was going to ask you is, if you ever watched it, here's a question, if you ever watched it, why and when did you stop watching The Walking Dead?
Okay. Steven, did you ever watch it?
I watched about two or three, yeah. Only episodes I watched is because I had my man on it.
Okay, and who's that?
I watched the Scott Wilson episode. After he died, as soon as they say Scott Wilson's on the next episode, I'm like, okay, I got to watch every episode Scott Wilson's in. And then I went, okay, he's gone. I don't have to watch it anymore.
You didn't like it?
No, it's just another repetitive zombie film.
Hmm. I thought the first few years were probably was pretty good television, pretty exciting, and that's when the zombies were the main nemesis. And then they started making it human monsters being scarier than the zombies, and I think it went downhill. And then you had your friend's character killed. I thought a big mistake of the show is they kept killing off the wrong people, and people that. The reason for these people to be struggling to survive was because of the future. And we as viewers don't care about the future if the people we wanted to survive for that future are killed off. So that's what happened. So that's when I stopped watching. A lot of people said they were still watching, and the final season's coming up, and I am going to watch the final episode. I'm not going to watch the season, but I do want to watch the final episode.
Yeah, I never watched it. I've never seen an episode. And I said this in reply, basically because they offered George Romero to start directing, and he said no, he doesn't want to do a show that's a soap opera with zombies. Mm-hmm. And when Romero said that, I said, well, I ain't watching that. Now, I will say this. As far as all the zombie shows out there, I'm a big fan of C-Nation. C-Nation, which was done by Asylum, it ran for four seasons, had great characters, had a really good storyline, which really, really pushed some things that you wouldn't believe. And then it was funny as fuck. It was just, listen, when they're in Wisconsin and they're killing all these zombies with a giant wheel of cheese, you got me. I'm watching that show.
I think you like comedies. You like comedy in your horror.
I do.
So Shaun of the Dead kind of thing.
Well,
American Werewolf in London.
You know, but I tell you what else. My favorite subgenre of horror is ghost stories. Ghost stories are the ones that get me. Seriously.
Ghost stories.
Oh, yeah. So Rachel, did you ever watch The Walking Dead, or did you have another show that you watched that was zombies?
Oh, I've watched all the zombie shows.
So when did you stop watching Walking Dead?
I don't feel like I've currently stopped. It's just been a few years since I started back up, but I had a really sordid history with trying to watch the show. And originally I didn't give any cares about it. And I had a friend that convinced me to come start watching it with them on, you know, the Sundays when it premiered every week. And then shit happened and we weren't as close as friends anymore. And then I started watching it with someone else, kind of watching it at that point. And I was like, okay, cool. But that person also happens to now be my ex-husband. So the third time around that I tried to watch the show, I started it back over with someone that I was also with for 5 years. And it took Netflix over a year to put out the new season from where we were able to, or where we had to stop watching. Like we watched it up through so many seasons, and it took them like a year to put out the new season. And by that point I was vested in other shows and that person was vested in, you know, not wanting to spend a whole lot of time with me. So again, reason we're exes. So yeah, I've started and gone through and tried to watch The Walking Dead. I've just never finished it.
Okay.
No, well, it's still on. You can catch up, of course. There are all those episodes. Yeah, I just
I can absolutely catch up, but I, like I said, I got vested in other things at that point, and I just didn't care as much about The Walking Dead. And then, of course, I saw some spoilers, and when they murdered Glenn, I was like, you motherfuckers. So, yeah. I wasn't as excited about watching it.
I noticed that was a breaking point for a lot of fans is when they killed Glenn off.
Yeah, but the problem with that is they almost killed him off another time, and we all thought he was dead. We were all upset, and then the next episode, it turns out he was still alive because the zombie couldn't reach him because there was a body on top of Glenn. So, but then they killed him off anyway, and then
they bashed his fucking brains in, and you're like, what the actual fuck? And I saw the videos of them recording because they didn't know where they were going to go with it. They recorded every death. Like, they recorded everybody from that camp lined up on their knees and getting bashed in the head, including a pregnant Maggie and shit. And so
A lot of people stopped watching then. Yeah.
I actually saw the previews of it before it happened, and I knew that it was like this whole big lineup thing, and at that point, I didn't know who was going to be the final victim, but I didn't fucking care. I was like, you know, it's been this long since they've, you know, put out a new episode, and this is where they're going to take it? Really? I mean, I know we're trying to get all hardcore and crazy with it, but maybe just, you know, simmer down now.
Yeah, I think they made wrong choices, and that was too brutal for anyone. And when Carl, the boy, got killed, I think I said that's it, because who cares about anybody else? That's the last of the youth that we wanted for the future. So at that point,
Carl is the one who ends up being the last survivor that we see in the comics of the original survival group.
In the comics, doesn't he?
No. Because the ending is Carl telling his daughter about his father.
Well, anyway.
Interesting.
That's another thing. One of my questions coming up probably next week or the week after is about poetic license. So should you be loyal to a graphic comic? I don't know. There were changes, and people would always get mad when they changed from the comic, but I never read the comic, so I didn't care one way or the other. I just thought it was a pretty good TV show, but I can see where people who love the, you know, graphic comics, that they would be angry, but I didn't care.
Yeah, well, we had a show on the Sandman and on the adaptation, the Neil Gaiman adaptation. And trust me, we went all into that. Plus, also, I had a show with Vicky, and she was talking about the new Lord of the Rings prequel. And she hated it. And the thing is, she talks about storytelling, and if you're going to adapt something from a graphic novel or a novel or, you know, whatever the case, a book, that at the very, very least, you have to be true to its intent and to storytelling. And she's big on storytelling. Say that again, Stephen.
I can prove you wrong, Carl.
Okay. Go ahead.
Have you ever read Rosemary's Baby, the book?
I tried.
Right.
I'm not a big Ira Levin fan.
Oh, it's a stupid book that made a great movie.
Oh, yeah, and there are those that do that, absolutely. Look at Jaws. Jaws is a horrible movie. And it's a great movie. You know, but then again, you have to adapt it. You have to adapt because they're different. They're different venues. Movies are not books, and books are not movies.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to adapt.
What do you think, Rachel?
I'm agreeing with adaptation.
Yeah, okay. All right. Just to let people know, let's go one more round, Danny, and then I think we've got questions for you, and we'll try to get this wrapped up in a half hour or less, okay? So one more.
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay. How good a director, this isn't producer, how good a director was Roger Corman?
Very damn good. I love The Intruder.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny, of all the films you pick is The Intruder, which is this outlier movie, which had about
it's
racism
really
and
drama film.
William Shatner. Yeah,
he was a good director. My favorite Poe film, of course, is Mask of the Red Death.
Yeah, that's the good one. That's the best. Tomb of Legio is probably the second best, in my opinion.
That asshole cat.
Yeah, absolutely, asshole cat.
So what do you guys say? What do you? All those early films, The Day the World Ended, The Wasp Woman, Mask of the Red Death.
I said this in the post. I actually replied to this. To me, Corman is incredibly workmanlike. And that is not a cut. That's meant as high praise because he's got very limited budgets. He's got casts that, you know, aren't well known and maybe not really good actors. And yet you look at those early films, you know, The Lost Woman, and they are just wonderfully compact little science fiction horror films. And they're wonderful. And they're what I grew up on. You know, I mean, I was a child of the 60s, born late 50s. And I was a kid, and we were in Pittsburgh, and, you know, there was Chiller Theater with Chili Billy Cardelli. And that's the type of stuff he would run all the time. And I just ate it up. I love them. And Corman in that period was, you know, cranking them out like crazy and also just, you know, really doing nice, solid films. And we laugh at a lot of the 50s films, but we don't laugh at Corman's. We don't. Not at all. I mean, Little Shop of Horrors, A Bucket of Blood.
Which may be his masterpiece, I think, Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, absolutely. And just incredible stuff coming out of Corman. So really good director. And then he goes on to the Poe films and with that Technicolor and just absolutely blows you away. Of course, he had Nick Rogue, too. You know, mm-hmm. But nonetheless, good God. Good God. You know, so yeah. Rachel,
yeah,
The Intruder, which was
mentioned, of course, did not make any money, and probably because he couldn't get distribution. And actually, in the North, you think in the South, a film about racism in the South, he couldn't get distribution. But in the North, because the N-word was used so much, and there's the racist language of William Shatner playing a racist, playing the intruder, was too harsh for a lot of the distributor for the film to get good distribution. So after that, he stopped doing message films, and I always thought that was a shame because he had left-leaning politics, and it sort of should have been in his films from him, directed by him, but all these directors that he hired, these young directors, the Jonathan Demis and Coppola and various others, Stephanie Rothman, they put their own politics into their own left-leaning politics into the film, but it wasn't mm-hmm. Corbin's idea. And he was more interested all of a sudden in just making money. And that was his primary thing. And if there were left-leaning politics, that was fine. But he became, you know, a money machine, and just one success mm-hmm. after another. But he never tried anything like The Intruder again.
The fourth member of our crew thinking you can't concur with us because we want your opinion because you're smart.
All right.
Huh? Say that again. I didn't hear it. I heard something.
The fourth member who hasn't answered yet. Rachel, yeah, and Rachel is smart, so we want her opinion.
We might have lost Rachel.
I mean.
Oh, no, there she is.
Oh, she's there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here. I've been here the whole time. So we're talking about Roger Corman as a director. Can I be really honest with you guys? That's a fucking old dude question. I'm 36 years old. I was born in 1985. Do you know the last movie Roger Corman directed? It was in 1990.
Yeah,
not
he hadn't directed anything before
that.
Frankenstein and
No, seriously. I have gone through and I looked at his IMDb, and yes, he's made a bunch of wonderful shit. But if you're asking me about Roger Corman as a director in my current, you know, role as the younger person on this show, I'm going to tell you to go fuck off.
Well, the one thing...
Personally,
I'm going to challenge you on this because even though in the 1950s, me, the oldest person here, remembers seeing all those films first run, starting with The Day the World Ended, which was one of my childhood favorite movies. I had no idea who Roger Corman was in those days as a kid growing up. It was only later to say, oh, that's Roger Corman, who made all the Vincent Price movies later and made Little Shop of Horrors. I didn't know who they were. But all the Roger Corman films that I saw as a kid are still playing. We see them all the time. They're all available, and, you know, you can see them. As soon as we hang up, if you can watch 10 Roger Corman films that he directed right away. So he's not like his films haven't disappeared. So that's all. That's my challenge because I think you've seen them.
I did not say that. I said mm-hmm. that if you're asking me in my current role in this show, I am the younger mm-hmm. voice. And if mm-hmm. you bring up Roger Corman, most people my age are going to be like, no, fuck you. I personally have seen and appreciate a lot of Roger Corman movies, but I'm just going to be a prissy bitch about it and say Roger Corman is not relevant to movies that I want to talk about right now. Cause you know, we've got so much stuff that's coming out that we need to discuss and figure out how it relates to things
part
like
of
this.
Well, I will say that young people, young filmmakers who make horror movies nowadays, you ask them about the films of Roger Corman, they do know them. They do know Roger Corman, but in general, they think horror movies began with the Shining and things like that, and The Thing by John Carpenter. That's how horror movies began. Yeah, well, that's what young directors. I've interviewed a lot of young directors who make horror movies, and that's basically their major influence. But they do know who Roger Corman is, and they have seen his films. Corman doesn't make a big impact on them thematically or visually or anything, but in the sense that his films made money, that has a big impact on them. And making commercial horror movies.
Yeah, like story-wise, it's commercial, it's relatable, and again, I never said he made bad movies or that I haven't seen any of them. I've seen a lot of his
movies. Making efficient movies, that's the main thing with Corman. You have to make an efficient movie in just a few days with a low budget, and then you put in $10 million, you make $100 million.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of our dear buddies, Sam Irvin, he is literally Hallmark's king of Christmas. He directs all of the Hallmark Channel's Christmas movies and stuff. And he does do them on a low budget, on a quick schedule, but he knows what he's doing and he knows what's going to sell and he knows what people are going to like. And I mean, I guess Roger Corman is kind of like the, you know, Sam Irvin of Halloween movies because he knows what people are going to like,
right,
and he's going to make his money.
Roger Corman's Day for the graduates of the Roger Corman School of Filmmaking, a.k.a. Francis Ford Coppola, Steven Spielberg, Joe Dante, Alan Arkish,
Alan Arsky, when I wrote this question, he's one of the people who answered, and he just talked about when he'd make a film for Corman, like Hollywood Boulevard, Corman would like stand there and watch him edit, and he said Corman is like brilliant as an editor. He just really knew how to put together a movie, and including on the set, he just, you know, and when they're making a film, they're that efficiency, he always knew what to do. So he, Alan Arkush, who did Rock and Roll High School, in case that's his big cult movie, really admires the filmmaking talents of Roger Corman.
Oh, absolutely.
As a producer, Roger Corman has garnered almost more Oscars than most major studio moguls have.
Yeah.
You know, one of the interesting things is apparently there's a new biography coming out on Roger Corman, and I'm thinking as a reader of a lot of celebrity biographies, everybody almost has conflict in their lives, and Roger Corman seemed to have like one success after another, year after year after year after year. So I'm kind of curious what kind of biography she would write that doesn't have any conflict in it, just unending success.
Well, you know, I want to get back to Sam Irvin because we were talking about Sam. Sam just posted today. He has four films lined up to direct that he has to get done before the end of the year. Seriously. And they're all Hallmark. This is what he does. And Corman was very much the same. So, Sam has the spirit of Corman in him, I guess. So I just wanted to give that. Okay, we're going to go now. We each have a question, and I'm going to start. And I want to bring up something else. I know we've been focusing on film, okay? And this is a question specifically for Danny. But you are very, very much into sports and baseball and such.
And I just want to mention to you, I posted it to you, congratulations on Gil Hodges making the Hall of Fame.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I played
that.
A little part with my co-authored biography of Gil Hodges, but so many people around the country were just so emotionally involved, including, of course, his family and his widow, who's 95 years old, just wanting him to get in the Hall of Fame year after year after year, decade after decade. He finally got in, and people are just emotionally pleased with that result, the rectifying of a wrong that's been there since the late 1960s. So anyway, thank you for mentioning it, Gil Hodges.
Oh, absolutely. So my question to you is, out of all the baseball that you've seen, okay, who is the greatest player that you've seen play baseball?
Well, my answer is going to be a little odd, but the greatest player I ever saw regularly was Mickey Mantle. I grew up in the 50s. Ted Williams was still hitting 388 one year and just amazing, and Stan Musial would get a hit every time up, and they were unbelievably great. And, of course, there was Willie Mays, who was always compared to Mickey Mantle, and most people who I've talked to in baseball say Willie Mays was the greatest player maybe ever. Including going all the way back to Babe Ruth, but definitely the best all-around player of the 1950s. But I watched the games that I would see when I was able to see major league games. There weren't a lot in those days, just the game of the week. But when I would come to New York to the city to visit family, I would WPIX Channel 11 would show Yankee games almost every day. And so I got to watch Mickey Mantle a lot, and I saw him in the stadium and whatever, and that was he's still the greatest player I ever saw. It just seemed like he would homer every game I watched, and I was an A's fan and an Indians fan and Angels fan, and whatever team I rooted for, he would kill. He would always hit ninth inning home runs or eighth inning home runs, and he had this amazing speed and just a great clutch player. And, that was for me the best player. And I was a Yankee hater, and I still just, God, is he a good player. Man, is he good. And, of course, as you know, he got injured his rookie year. He tore up his knee so badly that apparently, Whitey Ford told me that every time they go out to dinner, Mickey Mantle would be in such pain that he spent the entire meal just rubbing his knees because they hurt so badly, and that's how he played his career. But despite that, he was just an amazing ball player. That's my answer.
Yeah, great choice. For me, it was Roberto Clemente, but that's a different story for a different podcast.
That's an interesting story. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Let's see. Let's go over to Steven. Steven, you got a question?
No, I'll go last. Rachel has
enough
time tonight.
Okay. So, Rachel, go ahead.
Okay. Well, mine's a bit of a basic bitch question, but I got the option to ask any question I wanted to. And
yes,
it does kind of involve costuming, which I'm known a little bit for in the show. So, Danny, if you had just, like, the choice, no repercussions or anything else, which Rocky Horror Picture Show character would you cosplay? And maybe why?
I will say the boring character. What's his name? Whoever gets
Brett?
To touch Susan Sarandon's breasts. Let's put it that way. That's the character I want to play.
Brad is the husband, and
Rocky
Horror is the one that has sex with her. Actually, I think a lot of people
that's true,
that
but
point.
That's true. That's not the outfit that I would wear, though.
Okay.
But you're more into costuming than I am, so whatever.
Well, I'm really into Rocky Horror, no matter what. So I always like to ask people, like, who would you play if like, say, the group of us on the phone call plus another were cosplaying Rocky Horror, who would you be?
Well, the one you'd like to be is the Meatloaf's character. I mean, that's the coolest character.
Hey.
Yeah.
You agree?
Eddie is great.
Yeah, I'd
Eddie
be
is great.
Because I already got the, because Carl can tell you, I already got the scar on the side of my head, so I'll have to just put a little paint in there, and hey, I'm good.
Yeah, Barry Boswick, of course, is completely boring by intention. So I don't even know. I can't even remember what he wears in the movie until later when everybody dresses up.
And a robe for a while.
Yeah.
He wears his boxers and then a robe.
Well, Meatloaf's character is the coolest, though.
Oh,
I mean, Tim Curry.
Whatever
the one thing about
that Saturday night.
The one thing that movie that just people just Tim Curry is fabulous in that movie. I mean, just as an actor, boy, is he good in that movie. So.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Just so
that was Tim Curry in Rocky Horror Picture Show was actually my first ever crush, and I saw it when I was like 6 years old, and I still didn't know if that was a man or a woman, and that might explain some of my confused feelings about people in the world, but yes, totally, 100%. Frankenfurter, so hot. Eddie, he's the best. Love it.
Okay, and I want everyone to know that I did do this at one point. I had a friend of mine at the hospital give me a wheelchair, and I had a friend of mine lied to set me up costuming. I went as Dr. Scott.
Yeah.
Dr.
I'm
Scott.
Sorry, you
in
got
the...
Dr. Scott's face. Or is it Dr. Von Scott?
No, it's Dr. Scott, because they go, Janet. Dr. Scott, Janet,
Brown. Yeah, but don't you remember Frankenfurter and them sitting at the table? He's like, Dr. Scott, or shall I say, Dr. Von Scott. And then he goes, ap, we left.
Yep. So wait, Stephen, you have a question for Danny?
Yeah, Danny, I think me and you have a mutual friend who doesn't like us very much.
John Carpenter.
And that would be Finkelstein. When I heard he don't like you and he kicked you from his group, but he has a psychotic hatred of me, which astounds me with its level. Even Carl was down to the
I don't. I don't remember. Is he somebody who... who banned me from his posts or whatever?
He was just talking about that on the on his page.
Who was this person?
Steve Finkelstein.
Hey guys, just really quick here.
No idea who he is. Sorry.
Okay.
And that is the end of that question. So, Carl, could you go ahead and bring us up to the wraparound?
Absolutely. I can do that. So we're going to go here into housekeeping in just a moment. Let me get there. It takes a while. I was not at the computer, so forgive me. So... this coming week, we have only one show this week that we're going to do, and that is on Tuesday. And we are in basically on Tuesday. It is Yom Kippur, which is the Jewish New Year, and we're going to be doing a commentary watch on a Jewish horror film called The Vigil, which is one of my favorite films. I saw it a year or so ago on Hulu, and it's still on Hulu, and it is absolutely fantastic. Fantastic. So that's what we're going to do. And then we do have some other things planned, but nothing set in stone right now. You have to forgive me, but we're a little behind on scheduling because I've been ongoing a little bit of a health problem, but we're getting that all taken care of now. So we'll get back into the swing of things here pretty soon. So that's what we've got. Danny, before we go, please mention your books and your website, and where can we buy them, and so on and so forth.
All the ways we can love on Danny Perry, let us know, because we are going to, like, slather you with it.
Absolutely.
Well, I actually do not have a website. I just you can just find me if you friend me, you'll find me on Facebook. Hopefully people listening will answer some of my random questions that I do probably Monday to Friday every week. So that would be great. There are e-books that are available at Workman Publishing, whatever their site is. But most of my stuff is out of print, except for one of my baseball books, because I haven't done a book in a few years. I think my Muhammad Ali book, Ali on Ali with Hana Ali, I did that book, quotes. That book's available. I still in print, and Jackie Robinson in quotes should be in print, and whatever. I'm not exactly sure what's going on with my stuff, but it's all easy to find online, and I hope people read what I wrote, because that's why I wrote it, for people to read.
Your mouth words, Danny. We're going to make everybody read your shit.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And you guys are always fun. I'm always happy to talk to you, and you know, and keep when any of my questions interest you, please write something, write a comment. Carl, you don't like Steven Spielberg, and because you don't think he manipulates too much, and I want to talk to you sometime about that. About, is manipulation by a director a good or bad thing? So how about, you can think about that one.
Well, you know what? Let's get you on a podcast. I can get a couple other people, and we'll do that as the question. And as the, you know, I'll get in touch with you by message, and we'll talk about it, all right?
You like that question?
I love that question.
Okay.
I love that question.
Ahem. Yes.
We hear you, bitch. Go on.
Oh, no, I ain't a bitch. The bitch is lying next to me.
Aw, so called princess back.
Monday, me and Carl did a watch that you can still find on Spotify or at the Block Talk Radio of Stone, the Australian Biker Classic. And this Saturday, I'm going to be doing the show with Gene and George, and we're going to be talking about the Drive-In Monsterama Peter Cushing Memorial Tribute Weekend. And
nice.
Next week, me and Carl are going to be doing a movie. I would announce the title, but we really haven't found it yet. Find if we're going to do it, but otherwise we might have to do that magical thing that we usually do, which we call pulling it out of our tushies.
Which we do. We've been doing that for years, Stephen. He used to call me the day of a podcast, or say, we're doing a podcast tonight. This is who it is. Go get ready. It's like, Stephen. And then, of course, I would. So, yeah. Danny, as always, it's a pleasure to have you. Rachel, thank you very much. Stephen, it's great to have you on the podcast. Thank you very much for that. And I think at this point, what we're going to do is we're going to say goodnight, people. So let us say goodnight.
Good night, people.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny. Really appreciate it, man. Thank you, Stephen. Good night.